revolutionary CPR training and refresher skills, plus a look at sepsis and how it has real effects on patients and families every day. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, our podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and this is always a great opportunity to say hey and thank you for checking out the show. We've got a great program for you this week. First up in this week's episode, I have paramedic Greg Norton on the show. He's a CPR instructor and educator who works with the American Heart Association's RQI program to change the paradigm for resuscitation training and skills maintenance in his hospital facility. Could be coming to yours soon. Then we'll bring you a segment that underlines how every sepsis case is a real patient and the family who are impacted by our ability to rapidly recognize and mobilize to manage these critically ill patients. We'll have that and more coming up later on in this episode. Before we get to all that, though, I do want to make sure you do a couple of things. Always, always follow up on the information we talk about in the show each week and check out the links over at nursingshow.com in the show notes. You also will find other resources there. There are articles and links to our free Nursing Show mobile app, so you can get the podcast right on your phone every week, student nurse tips, and a lot of other stuff. But follow up on what you hear me talk about with our guests on the show each week and understand how it's applied using your own nursing scope of practice. If you want to get back in touch with me and you have a question or a comment, I'd love to hear from you. Send those emails in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I will get back to you. I respond back to every email that comes in. And I love to hear from you with news items, links to things you want me to take a look at, interview suggestions or topics for future episodes. Whatever the case may be, I want to keep those emails coming in. Also, a special thank you to both Physio-Control and the American Heart Association for partnering with The Nursing Show this month. You can find out links to all the resources that we talk about with them in the show notes for this episode over at nursingshow.com. That's it. I'll have some more contact information coming up later on in this episode, but let's go ahead and get on into this week's news items. They're coming right up. In this week's special interview for the news, I have a segment from our partners at the American Heart Association with paramedic Greg Norton. He's a CPR instructor and educator who works with the American Heart Association's RQI, or Resuscitation Quality Improvement Program, and it's really changing the paradigm for resuscitation training and skills maintenance in hospital facilities. Check it out. Hi, Greg. I want to welcome you to the show. And before we get into talking about our main topic, I thought we'd give the chance for the audience to get to know you a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. My name is Gregory Norton, and I am a staff training senior coordinator at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. In this role, I serve as the American Heart Association Training Center Coordinator, and I directly oversee basic life support education programs for the medical center, which includes Resuscitation Quality Improvement Program. I have a master's degree in healthcare administration with a focus on adult education, and I've been a paramedic in Central Ohio for about 20 years, focusing both in pre-hospital and hospital-based emergency medicine.
So you've had a lot of experience with managing patients in cardiac arrest and doing CPR.
I have, and I've been a CPR instructor for most of my professional career. So I've practiced it and I've taught it many times.
Yeah, me too. it's interesting, and that gets us to our next subject because, you know, the training of CPR for people is one of those, well, in healthcare, we see it as a hassle. You know, as an instructor, I come in and everybody's like, oh, can't we just take the test and go home? You know, it's that kind of thing. But over there at your location, you guys have implemented a whole new setup there at the Wexner Medical Center. And you're using this new high quality method of training people in CPR over intervals throughout the course of their training.
That's correct. We are using a program called Resuscitation Quality Improvement, or RQI for short. An RQI is an AHA program that was developed to improve resuscitation education, which includes basic life support and advanced cardiac life support. At this time, the Weixter Medical Center is focusing on the basic life support side of things, but we do have plans to incorporate ACLS in the future as well. The program works by providing low-dose, high-frequency learning through a series of quarterly educational activities and some annual learning modules. Quarterly activities cover the psychomotor aspects, the physical skills of cardiac resuscitation, which includes things like performing chest compressions and providing ventilations. The annual modules cover the cognitive or didactic content, which includes things like the sequence of events from recognizing an emergency, activation of a response plan, providing initial one rescue assistance, through team resuscitation, and even immediate post-arrest care. The educational benefits of RQI are twofold. First, by practicing a little bit each quarter, your skills stay sharper, kind of the way an athlete or a musician practices frequently to maintain a level of competency in their craft. The second benefit from RQI comes in the way the skills are practiced. Unlike traditional CPR, which you indicated, which uses low-fidelity mannequins, RQI is not subjective. There's little or no instructor bias because RQI utilizes a computerized mannequin which provides real-time objective audio-visual feedback. The learner can see what they're doing as they're doing it and improve upon their practice as they're training. This helps to ensure that the learner is practicing the skills correctly. These combined effects lead to CPR skills that are superior to traditional education. For example, staff that don't utilize their skills very often are able to maintain a level of competency that would normally deteriorate over the two-year gap between traditional classes. And staff that use the skills frequently in critical environments have a tendency to maintain better skills by practicing them often and not reinforcing bad habits that they may pick up along the way. If they're losing quality or picking up a bad habit, RQI can help correct that each quarter when they recertify.
Yeah, that's a really exciting program, and I like how it takes those people in the hospital setting, especially that, like you said, don't get an opportunity to perform CPR, perhaps never in their career, to still be prepared to jump in at the moment's notice with high quality CPR skills because of this regular frequent training. How have people responded to that?
The staff really enjoy it. They generally embrace the program. And I think a large part of that was how we opted to introduce RQI. We did a lot of, a media campaign with the staff, letting them know that it was coming, explaining the program, kind of talking about why we were going to this program, how it works in general. And what we did was try to present RQI as a true culture change. It isn't just a new way to teach CPR. It's not just a method to punch the clock, if you will, and renew your card every couple of years. What RQI is it's about maintaining and improving a vital set of skills that we utilize in our professional practice, sometimes frequently, sometimes less frequently. But when we use them, we need to do them correctly. And what RQI does is give us those tools to maintain that higher level of competency. So we really worked with the staff to promote this as a whole new way of learning and maintaining skills rather than just a way of getting a new CPR card. Using the AHA's terminology, we are maintaining competency, not just maintaining a certification.
Yeah, I like that. I like how they approach that. That idea of it's a skill you need for the management of your patients, no different than any other skill you use in your practice, not just a certification you have to maintain.
Right. And by presenting as a culture change, we've been able to get the staff to really buy into it. And once they got started, they learned relatively quickly. It's not difficult. It doesn't take a lot of time. And in a lot of cases, we're finding people are having fun with it. We've started to notice that staff members will go do their activities in teams. Two or three people will go down, and it becomes kind of a friendly competition. See who can get the best competency score, or miss the fewest questions on the exams, et cetera. So it really is something that the staff has embraced, and they're really enjoying the change in the educational environment.
And that's interesting because that's something I've seen, talking to other systems, places like King County, Washington, where the paramedics there are highly competitive with each other on their compression factor and things like that. it's nice to see that you're saying that that same thing is occurring inside the hospital setting too.
Right. And it's one of those things that initially we had talked about ways that we could promote that or try to encourage that. And we really didn't have to. It was one of those things that if you give something that they can measure their performance by, I think just that natural drive that you see in healthcare providers to be the best, to be the top of their game, that competition or that competitive spirit just kind of came through without a lot of encouragement. But it's exactly what we wanted to see. The staff is really embracing it, and they're using it as a way to keep their training entertaining but still provide that vital improvement in skills and quality.
So since you've implemented the RQI program, the resuscitation quality improvement program, what have you seen? I mean, have you had time to really look at the data? Has it improved cardiac arrest survival? Have you seen an improvement in the quality of CPR being performed for patients?
We have. We have seen a couple of things that have been very, very positive. We've been using RQI for just over 2 years with our original group of users, and we're slowly expanding it to encompass all of the hospital. But we've had a core group of users that have been on the program for about 2 years. And prior to that, we were part of the original study that led to the development or kind of polished the final product that is RQI. So in some capacity, we've been involved in this for about 4 or 5 years now. One thing I always want to preface when I talk about this, it's hard to directly attribute patient survival to any one element. As I'm sure you're aware, there's so many elements that go into a resuscitation, and our pharmacy has a program that they're working on. Our Code Blue team has response programs and quality programs that they're working on. We've got educational elements with our nursing education and our college of medicine. So anytime we see an improvement in patient survival, everybody has a hand in that, and there's not really any way to point a finger and say, well, hey, that was your program that did this, or that was your program that did this. It's all part of the process. But one thing we can do is look at individual elements, in particular CPR quality. And we do use software and equipment that allow us to look at CPR data and compare various metrics with actual patients. And in that sense, since using RQI, we have seen some very significant improvements. Looking at our initial core units, over the first year, we saw improvements in compression and ventilation rates. They were good. They were within AHA recommendations, but they're closer to the numbers that we wanted to see them. CPR is generally initiated quicker, and the performance is more consistent. There's fewer gaps in the CPR overall. Most importantly, probably the most stunning piece of data came out of those original two units. After just 1 year of using RQI, we saw an improvement in our compression fraction from just under 83% to right at 92%.
Oh, so, excellent.
And there's no question RQI is having a huge impact on resuscitation quality, and that can't help but lead to improved patient odds.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I like what you said in the beginning there was, you know, it is all about a system of care, and RQI is not going to solve the problem all by itself. It is part of a total systemized approach to improving cardiac arrest care, but it is an important part of that. And it's great to see that you guys have seen some solid improvement in things like compression fraction. So it's great to hear that. Just any final thoughts, Greg, you'd offer to maybe a system out there that's trying to see, is this something that will work for their system? Do you think this is something that can work in any facility?
I think RQI is a program that can work with anybody who practices CPR, whether you practice it frequently or infrequently. It really is a great way to maintain those skills. And it's a very simple system at its core. I mean, it works on a very basic principle. Let's not learn everything we need to know in one sitting. Let's take a piece of it and learn it today. And in a month or two, we'll come back and we'll learn a little bit more. And we'll continuously build on that. The parts that we need to reinforce, we'll reinforce. And you just see those quality of skills grow over time. Even from one quarter to the next, we see improvement in quality. And the more users are involved in the program, the longer they're in it, the better that skill set becomes. And it really makes CPR almost a habit. You develop that muscle memory, you develop that instinct, and you don't have to think about how fast am I going, how deep am I pushing. Your body just naturally falls into that rhythm, and you do a much better job. So I really think RQI could benefit any system that is considering it. The big thing with it, be open with your staff, be encouraging, and support them. You know, it's not a way to say, look, we're not teaching classes anymore. Your instructors will take on a whole new role as RQI coaches, as product champions or super users, if you want to call them that, and help support the staff. We have yet to have a staff member who couldn't get through an activity. Sometimes we find we need to do a little coaching, but we can always find a way to adapt that user, that individual learner, and find a way to improve their quality of care.
Excellent. Well, Greg, I want to thank you for taking some time to chat with me and our audience here. You know, it's important to always continually improve our practice in healthcare, and I'm excited to be able to share this with them. And kudos to you guys over there at Wexner, Wexner Medical Center at The Ohio State University, for championing this program, for leading the way for others so that we can have better care for our cardiac arrest patients.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Next up, let's take a look at how one parent who lost a child to sepsis is working to educate all healthcare professionals about the importance of strengthening our skills and knowledge in recognizing sepsis in our patients. Here's a special interview from the AACN-NTI conference earlier this year. Hi, Jamie Davis here from The Nursing Show and nursingshow.com. We're here at NTI 2016, the Critical Care Nurses Conference for AACN, and we're going to be talking about sepsis in this segment. I have Carl Flatley here from the Sepsis Alliance, and Carl, I've been talking to you before we started recording. It's busy and noisy here in the hall, but we had an opportunity to really share a little bit about how the Sepsis Alliance started. Could you share that with my audience?
Yes, in 2003, I lost my daughter, Erin, 23 years old, healthy as can be. Went in for a simple hemorrhoidectomy, and 5 days later, she passed of septic shock. And it surprised me so much that I had to do something. So I started the Alliance, and now it's been 13 years, and we've made tremendous progress. I mean, there's a World Sepsis Day, there's a Sepsis Awareness Month. We've been the CDC. The CDC now is doing a lot of work. Our organization has grown to a point now where we're all across the United States, and we have this, we're probably the number one advocacy group for sepsis. And so we have made progress. We're making a difference. She is.
She is, and I applaud you for taking something so tragic and turning it into a positive, and helping nurses and paramedics and doctors become better at recognizing and getting ahead of the sepsis curve, which is what I like to call it when I talk to people and teach about it, is that we need to get ahead of it and learn what to do, learn to recognize it early, and then learn to treat it aggressively. And I know that there's been a lot that you do to build the awareness about that.
Well, we work with nurses, hospitals, and again, so that sepsis is treated as a medical emergency, and the results are coming in already. I mean, hospitals, if they're doing the right thing, early recognition, prompt treatment, they can reduce their mortality by 40 to 50%. I mean, it's remarkable, and some hospitals are just exceptional as to what they're doing. They just all need to do it now.
Yeah, we continue to build awareness. One of the things you're doing, I think, that's a great idea, is creating some awards to recognize those in healthcare arena that are doing the right things with sepsis. And so you've created a new nursing award that I know was announced recently. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, so before, in the last few years, we've had the Sepsis Heroes Awards, which we award during Sepsis Awareness Month in New York. I just got involved with NASCAR, and they are all about children and building relationships and health of children. So I decided, through Erin's memory and her foundation, to create the Erin K. Flatley. It's called the Erin's Campaign for Kids. And we're giving two monetary awards. There's actually going to be three awards, but two of those will go to nurses in the pediatric arena and treating kids. And then we're going to have a even larger award called the Erin K. Flatley Spirit Award, which will be an individual who's been touched by sepsis or maybe their family, and they are giving back in either monetary way or charitable way. And we're excited about it. That's going to be announced in September during Sepsis Awareness Month. And we want to recognize all the nurses, which are the absolute answer to sepsis awareness and reducing sepsis mortality. So we're proud of our nurses.
Well, thank you very much for creating those awards and for creating the Sepsis Alliance and building awareness. Where can people find more information if they want to find out more about your organization?
Yeah, if they go to sepsis.org, and there's a lot of downloadable material. There's just about anything. There's also a section called Face the Sepsis. And we probably have 500 different people now who have written their stories. And you can relate to these people as to what they had. Maybe it was kidney stones, pneumonia, flu. Some of them are very tragic, but we all learn from those stories. So that website, as we get, I don't know, it's a lot of hits. It's been very successful.
Well, Carl, thank you for chatting with me here on The Nursing Show. And I want to thank all of you for checking out this segment here from NTI 2016. We're talking about sepsis. Build your sepsis awareness. Head over and check out sepsis.org for yourself. That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. Make sure you follow up, though, on all of the information you picked up in this episode. Head over to nursingshow.com and check out the episode show notes. There's a link right there at the top of the page. In there are listings for all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. From the most recent one at the top, you can scroll down and go all the way back to the very first episode. But I want you to get the full information there with links to other resources so that you understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me your comments, your questions, suggestions, news links. Help support the Nursing Show community with your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter. There's a link and form right on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site, so fill out that short form, and we'll send you the links to each episode's show notes directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me on social media sites. I'm available there under the handle PodMedic, so you can find me there under twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic, so friend or follow me. You can also become a member of the community over on Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page at facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button there and join the conversation on that page. I post other nursing and healthcare articles and pictures on the Nursing Show site throughout the course of each week and over at the Nursing Show page, so check it all out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. Remember, it comes out every Friday for you, so you can wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.